and it started to recording. And now I'll introduce myself, and then Susan will introduce herself, and we'll get started. So I'm Sister Patricia, and I work with Susan Rowland just for this book because I just found out about what a great book it is through a special event we have where we were both authors signing books. And it's just a really good book, Make Room for God, Clearing Out the Clutter. And I live in a monastery, and a lot of people think people who live in monasteries have their whole act together, but there's a lot of clutter bugs even in monasteries, and I'm a bona fide member of the clutter bug. So I'm really happy to be with you, and I'm really happy to share with Susan what Susan's going to share with us about this call. So you take it over, Susan.
Hi, everybody. Hi, Sister Pat. I am Susan K. Rowland, author of Make Room for God, Clearing Out the Clutter. I want to welcome everybody who's joined us from all over the country and the world. We have people joining us from overseas, too. We want to talk today about making room for God this Christmas. But first, I want to encourage everybody listening to get a notebook or some paper and a pen to take notes. We will be asking you some questions that you will want to write down and answer on your own time and think about in the next few weeks until Christmas comes. We will also email those to everybody that we can, but if you take your notes now, you'll have them in hand. You won't have to check your email later. Also, we are going to open up the phone lines, but we have decided to do this at the very end of the seminar, so that anybody who needs to get off or off to bed, if you're some of you on the East Coast are joining us kind of late, if you need to get your kids off to bed, et cetera, or get home, then you can do that. And the rest of us can stay on the phone lines, and those of you on the Internet can type up questions anytime you want. There's a box there. I'm sure you'll see it. So let us get started. Our seminar today is called Make Room for God This Christmas. Now, isn't it odd that we have to talk about that, to make room for God at Christmas time? Isn't Christmas
it's supposed to be all about Jesus. And even in the monastery, there's just so many things to be done. You know, I'm a sacristan, so I have the chapel to get ready and the music to plan. And there's just, it seems like the bigger the occasion is, even if it's a holy one, there's just tons of things to do.
This is true. Things to do. It is odd when you think about it, especially in our culture. Our culture has taken Christmas, hasn't it? Our consumerist society, the manufacturers, the stores, the advertisers have appropriated Christmas, haven't they? There are lots and lots of ways our culture has sneaked into our Christian lives, but tonight we're just going to talk about what the culture has done to Christmas. Our culture says about Christmas, buy, buy, buy. Put on the perfect Christmas. The decor has to be perfect, the perfect present for everybody, the visits that just should be the most wonderful visits you've ever had with family and friends, the perfect party, the perfect meals. And also you need to reach out to those you won't be seeing. You have to send Christmas cards, letters, gifts, photos. You also need to reach out to those less fortunate because everybody doesn't have a wonderful Christmas. And finally, let's all get crazy. Everybody else is doing it.
Yep, getting crazy is so typical of our culture. It's just rushed, get everything done, it's not going to be a perfect Christmas if we don't have everything done.
Oh, exactly, yes. What I say about Christmas is it's our culture on steroids. It is everything that our culture is, only really, really magnified. So we're going to talk about that just a little bit. Most of us know that something is wrong with the way we do Christmas today. But I want to tell you, I have an antidote for this. Actually, it's God's antidote. And you actually know it in your heart of hearts. It may even sound simplistic when you hear what I'm going to recommend. But please listen with an open heart. Listen to this seminar and take notes, because even though you may say, oh, I already know that, we always need reminders. In this culture, we can get overwhelmed with doing and forget who we are. And that's a big thing with me. I'm always talking about that. What are we doing versus who are we? But first, let's shine some light on Christmas in today's culture. Why do we want to do that? Why do we want to shine a light on it? Jesus said in John 3:20 and 21 that evil hates the light and goodness loves the light. He also promised that we would know the truth and the truth would set us free. Now, what that means to me is that when I talk something through, especially with a Christian sister or brother, and put it out into the light in the air, it doesn't have as much power over me. The things I keep hidden in my mind that I don't even bring to God's, you know, into God's light, but especially when I don't talk about them, are the things that really seem to have more power over me. So the first thing we're going to do tonight is we're going to diagnose Christmas. First, we're going to diagnose our emotional involvement with Christmas. Then I'm going to ask us all to diagnose our practical involvement with Christmas.
And, you know, you kind of already said this, why it's important, but what is it, why don't we just get started with making a list and get started?
Well, actually, a lot of us...
diagnosis so important?
Yeah, a lot of us have probably made a list. That's not really a list, isn't a diagnosis. A diagnosis is what a doctor does when he wants to find out what is wrong with you. And we know there's something wrong with Christmas in this culture. It's the very beginning of getting well. A doctor always starts with tests. He doesn't just start talking to you about what's wrong with you. When I went to my doctor for an exam 2 years ago, I just went for some simple blood tests. And he found out that I had diabetes. Now, if he had just told me that my symptoms might have been, oh, high blood pressure, you're under a lot of stress, a lot of people have high blood pressure, here's some pills, he could have done a lot of harm to me. A proper diagnosis is essential before you can begin to heal. We can't begin the cure until we have a diagnosis. We really need healing when it comes to our observance of Christmas. We can diagnose the culture easily. Let's do that. Let's sit back and kind of look at the culture. We know the motivation of manufacturers and stores and stockholders and that kind of thing. It's fear. This is their last big chance to have a successful year. That's where the term Black Friday comes from, the day after Thanksgiving. That often is the first day that the manufacturers of the stores go into the black, which means that they start making a profit at the very end of the year, and they really need that to come out ahead and to make a profit by Christmas, you know, by the end of the year. If they don't sell enough at Christmas time, well, it's a disaster to them, maybe failure. But what about us? Unless you're a shop owner or a manufacturer, why are we so afraid and anxious at Christmas time? And I do believe that that is something we experience, that we are afraid and anxious, that we want things to be perfect and we want things to be a certain way. What do you find yourself doing this time of year? And here comes your first question. So pick up your pen. And the first question I want to ask you is, why is Christmas so important to me? Why is Christmas so important to me? And then, to help you answer that question, the second question would be, it's the fill in the blank. It is the only time of year when blank. What happens at Christmas that it's so important to you? What do you hope will happen? So those are your two questions. Why is Christmas so important to me? And it's the only time of year when blank. Today I am asking you to diagnose your emotional involvement with Christmas. I want you to shine a little light on it and say, what is it that you're hoping and expecting for each Christmas? What is it you're hoping will be healed? What is you hoping will be reconciled? Okay, it might be family reconciliation. It might just be a feeling that you're a worthy person that you can put on Christmas, you know. Maybe the only time of the year when certain things happen, maybe when visits happen or certain people get together in your life, that kind of thing. You may have childhood memories that are kind of painful, and you're trying to make up for that. It's okay to shine a light on that. That will help you get better. That will diagnose your emotional involvement. Now we want to diagnose our actual participation in Christmas. And Sister Pat and I are going to talk about some of the things we do, which we've kind of rehearsed this and come up with some very funny things. The first thing I want to talk about is the Christmas card, Christmas letter, professional portrait of the children. Now, I was into this in a big way when my kids were growing up. It had to be the wonderful picture and a long Christmas letter, and I sent these out to about 85 people. Have you done that, Sister Pat?
Yeah, I did it once in my whole life, and every
once
other
in
year
your
I
life.
Bought Christmas yeah, my whole life. And so every other year I bought the Christmas cards, but they're still there in January. And so it's one of those that I know that I should do, but it just never, ever gets off the floor.
You know that you should do it, though? Oh, well. You know what? I stopped doing it a few years ago because, first of all, my kids were getting older, and then I went through a divorce, and I didn't think people wanted to hear my depressing news at Christmas time. And I feel guilty, too, but it's strange that you feel guilty and you never did it, and I feel guilty because I used to do it. So that's another thing, another diagnosis thing. Why do we feel this kind of guilt?
I think it's expectancy. Yeah,
excuse me?
Expectancy of what you should do.
Oh, yeah, expectancy. That's a good point, expectancy. And then that brings us to the next thing, which is the perfect gift for everybody on your list. And that is, I guess, we're hoping that the little faces will light up or the older faces will light up, and the people we love will say, oh, this is exactly what I wanted, you know, which is a wonderful thing, but it's really hard to pull off. I did it maybe one time when we bought my son a bike, and he got up in the morning on Christmas morning. He was about 6, and he got his first bike, and he just screamed with delight. That was wonderful, but I have had a hard time repeating that performance. So how about you?
Yeah. Well, you know, the perfect gift, what really made it clear for me was I have a brother. He's up in heaven now, but he was a little slow in some ways, but he had a different take on things. And one time he wanted me to go with him for Christmas shopping. And so he had so much money, and he had this list of people that he wanted to buy Christmas presents for. But he didn't map it out where, you know, if you have $100 and you have 10 people, everybody gets $10.
Oh, yeah.
He looked at the presents, and he bought one person something that cost $40 because would fit the person. And the next person, it cost $5 because that would fit the person. And it was he bought according to what he saw would fit the person, and he didn't even put money, a tag, on this person's getting a $40 gift and this person's getting a $5 gift. He bought according to what he saw would fit the person's best. And, you know, it was such an insight to me. I said, that is so cool, you know, that you buy when something strikes your heart that they would like that. And, you know, I mean, of course.
Oh, wouldn't that be freeing if you could shop that way? Because, you know, you wouldn't have to spend nearly as much because
the perfect gift doesn't cost $80.
Excuse me?
Yeah, you might spend exactly the same amount, but you know what? Because
you
only have so much. It's just like, oh, if I spend $10 for Sue, then I got to spend $10 for Joe,
And
it's like,
and we used to worry about that with our kids. I used to keep a list of who got what, and somebody might want a bigger present, so they'd get less gifts. So it was like juggling how many gifts each person got to open versus how much did you spend on them. And they always knew. They always knew. That was really tough. That's another tough part. How can you buy the perfect gift when you're worried about the money and whether everybody gets the same? So that's a little strange. The next thing I want to talk about is parties and get-togethers. Parties and get-togethers, everybody, this is part of the holidays. And I guess my feeling is go for it because this is all about relationships, but don't get crazy about it. I love parties and get-togethers. How about you?
Well, of course, I'm stuck. I'm not saying stuck. I'm glad to be in a monastery. But we don't have a lot of parties in the monastery, except with among ourselves, you know. And we have family over sometimes, like mom or something, you know. But it's not really huge. So I think I can check out on this one.
Well, you know what, though? I spent, it was after Christmas in a sister's community. And New Year's Eve, just a small group of us got together and opened up a bottle of wine. And I remember that as one of our nicest get-togethers. And it was just a simple party with cheese and crackers and a bottle of wine. So, you know, it doesn't have to be anything elaborate. I didn't mean to get in and be kind of diagnosing here, but I do love parties and get-togethers. Now, how about the decor, the creche and the tree and the inside and outside trimmings? My goodness, I used to go all out here. I don't do that anymore, but, of course, when you have children, I guess they expect that of you. How about in the convent?
Well, we actually go out a lot for Christmas. We have actually a handyman come in and put the lights on around the outside. We have them up and down the stairwell. We have garlands up and down the stairs. We have four flights of stairs. We have garlands on every flight. and
oh,
we have
goodness.
Christmas trees, and so we go crazy.
I had no idea.
Oh, sure. You know, Christmas is a Christian holiday, so it really needs to be done right in the monastery.
So we make
it a big holiday.
That is so cool. I guess I would have never thought of that, you know. But, of course, and then there's the food. We love our food, and there's certain things that we make only at Christmas time and only when certain people come over, you know, their get-together. And I suppose every woman has, maybe a lot of men do too, have their special dishes that they make at the holidays. So I'm sure food is a big, important part of the convent Christmas too, isn't it?
It is, because every sister has their favorites, and they try really hard to make every Christmas, you know, meaningful for each sister. So, we live together, and we know what it is that Christmas wouldn't be Christmas without, for me, pecan pie or with somebody else, you know, with stuffing, turkey stuffing. Or it's just all those little things that make Christmas
and we do
delight.
So look forward to it. Yes, absolutely. I just really look forward to that kind of food. My kids have different things now. They come to visit me, and I'm always surprised what they ask me to cook, but there's nothing like mom's home cooking. So, but this time my son is coming before Christmas, and he wants pork chops. So I don't know how kosher that is, but we're not worried about that. So, and then the last thing is what we do on Christmas Eve and Christmas itself. And, of course, that I really believe in getting, the input from the other people you're living with. So I think you and the convent decide how to spend Christmas by talking with one another. We learned very early on when our kids were younger to ask them what they wanted to do. And they came up with some really neat traditions like a fast food chicken dinner and games on Christmas Eve after the children's mass. So, and of course, you had to put the baby Jesus in the creche in the morning, and then they had to inspect it and make sure that Jesus was born. And of course, there were footprints of Santa Claus on the hearth and that kind of thing. So we just had, it's wonderful when you have little kids. You can have these little things, and then it comes down to Christmas Day, and that's what it's all about, as long as you haven't made yourself crazy beforehand. So,
we spend Christmas a little different. We have, you know, we have midnight mass, and so we're actually it's nowadays 10:30 mass. But and then afterwards we have like cocoa and some cookies and stuff, and then we have and so we get to bed usually about midnight. But then we have mass again at in the morning, so we're back up at 5 o'clock in the morning to start our day again with Christmas mass, and then we have in the evening. We'll usually have family and stuff over for Christmas dinner. So Christmas Day itself is, we're really pretty tired. So we don't really open presents till we have the 12 days of Christmas. And we, that's one of the things we do in the monastery is we keep the 12 days of Christmas very good. And we often don't have Christmas till 3 or 4 days after, you know, the Christmas gifts part, actually opening Christmas gifts till we're really ready to enjoy that time. So, on Christmas Day, we kind of relax, and in between, you know, between the Christmas Mass and Christmas dinner, we just kind of. And
what
sometimes
a wonderful
we open up,
tradition!
We'll open up a, yeah, we'll open
that
up
would really take
a
lot
too,
of the
but,
heat off people about Christmas if we remember that it is 12 days, and maybe not everything has to be done on that day. Now there's an idea, folks. Didn't even think about that. Let's think about what you're actually doing at Christmas time, folks out there who are listening to us. I want you to write another question. Actually, this is a four-part question. What am I doing at Christmas time? This is another thing about shining the light on what you're doing, what you usually do. First question, what brings you joy about your Christmas preparations that you normally do? What brings you joy? Write that down. Second question, what do you love doing? And this could be something peculiar, but shine the light on it and think about what you love doing. Not just what people expect you to do or that you do every year, but the things you love doing. The third question is, what do you suspect you're doing out of guilt? What do you suspect you're doing out of guilt? Is it all those letters you send out? Is it certain parties or people that you have in that you don't really enjoy doing? Is it the shopping because you're so worried about making all the gifts even or buying enough for each person? And then the last thing is, what just isn't working anymore? What did you used to do that maybe you enjoyed, maybe you loved it, but it's just not working anymore? I have a friend who baked cookies for everybody else in town, and she baked all through November, and we loved her cookies, and some of us loaned her space in our big freezers, and we got a free plate of cookies for doing that. And she baked and baked all through November, and she sold the cookies, and of course that saved a lot of us from having to bake, and she made enough to buy a really nice Christmas for her family. But she doesn't do that anymore because you know what? It's not working. And yes, we're disappointed in the cookies are being gone, but you know what? I understand and respect that you can't do something like that forever and ever and have it still work, you know? I'm a big believer in diagnosing what we are doing and why. Only when we look closely at our feelings and actions will we be able to change. When I was really crazy a few years ago at the turn of the millennium, and not just at Christmas, mind you, but all the time, I was always, always busy, busy, busy. I hardly took the time to think about what was happening to me. I just reacted to whatever was pushing me that day, whatever was on my list, and of course I kept adding and adding and adding to it. I rushed around all day doing stuff, worrying, even later having anxiety attacks. This is not good. And I never stopped and thought about it. If your life is like that, you need to stop. You need to stop and just look at it. Write some things down. What am I trying to do here and why? That's what we're doing with this Christmas thing. So we're going to teach you a new skill, and we're going to apply it to December of 2007. And then later on in 2008, you can apply it to other things in your life. But let's get to the promise of this teleseminar, which is that I was going to tell you the antidote to all this rushing around and to what the culture pushes us to do. We have to let Jesus in. All right, that sounds like, sure, I know that, I know that. Even at this busy time of year, especially at this time of year, we've got to make time to let Jesus in. So there are two new habits. Now, for some of you, they may not sound like new habits, and they may not be new habits, but they probably are. Two new habits I recommend are morning prayer, first thing in the morning, and Sabbath keeping. Now, we don't have the time to go into the Sabbath in a lot of detail tonight, except to make a recommendation later on about Sabbath keeping during Advent. That's a topic for a whole nother seminar. But let's talk about our morning appointment with Jesus. If you don't already do this, Advent now, with all this busyness going on, is a wonderful time to start. Yes, I know you're too busy to pray, but if you're too busy to pray, then you really need to, don't you? If you're already faithful to that morning appointment, let's talk about it a little bit and tweak it a little bit to make it more profitable for your relationship with God. If you can hold off the world for a half hour every morning and one day per week, during the Christmas season no less, when the culture is pushing you and trying to mold you into its mold, you are well on your way of being free of that culture and being your own person. So these two things, the morning appointment and the Sabbath, are God's antidotes for this culture. And you know what? They've always been God's antidotes to every culture, because every culture always has tried to put us into its mold instead of God's mold. God doesn't want us in a mold. He wants us to be free. Only by being faithful to these two practices, the morning appointment and the Sabbath, can we be free of the culture that presses so hard on us to make us conform to its way of doing things, even doing Jesus' birthday. So let's start with morning prayer, and I want to read a quote to you from C.S. Lewis. This is from his book, Mere Christianity, and he says, "The real problem of the Christian life comes the very moment you wake up every morning." Well, isn't that the truth? You ever wake up in the morning, and you're already getting crazy before your feet even hit the floor? And he continues to say, "All your wishes and hopes for the day rush at you like wild animals, and the first job every morning consists simply in shoving them all back, in listening to that other voice, taking that other point of view, and letting that other, larger, stronger, quieter life come flowing in." Now, I read these words when I was a young woman back in 1970, And I've been struggling with this for 37 years. I'm not a morning person, so I'm tired and hungry and cranky in the morning, and I've had so much to do when I had a family, coffee and lunches to make, last-minute clothes emergencies, things to sign, missed buses, etc. My attitude was, I don't have time to pray now. I've got to get going. I'll pray when the dust settles. And you know what? Oftentimes the dust did not settle for days and weeks and months, and I always felt awful because I felt like I had let God down. And more than that, I knew I'd let myself down. Recently, I read the best-selling book, Eat, Pray, Love, by Elizabeth Gilbert. She's been on Oprah, and a lot of you know about this book because she was on Oprah, and this book is just at the top of the bestseller list. I hope that a lot of you will read it. I was confronted with someone who is not a Christian, who is faithful to the morning prayer practice, and she quite put me to shame. She was very honest about how hard it can be. She reported her struggles in the middle section of the book, the pray part, where she wrote about spending 4 months in an ashram in India learning the discipline of Eastern prayer. She hated getting up at 4 a.m. She hated the group prayer chant that started the day because I think she said it went on, it was 100 verses of this song, this morning song that they sing. She especially loathed the quiet hours of meditation. She was bored and restless and even full of rage some mornings, actual rage. Worst of all, she found herself confronting her own issues every time she was quiet and tried to pray. She'd just been through a very painful divorce, and she couldn't get any peace and quiet in her head. Does this sound familiar? It was very familiar to me, and I was in total sympathy. But then toward the end of that section, she wrote these words. These are on page 175 for those of you who have the book. We all agree that it would be easier to sleep in, and many of us do, but for millennia, there have been others who choose instead to get up before the sun and wash their faces and go to their prayers. And then they fiercely try to hold on to their devotional convictions throughout the lunacy of another day. Well, I decided after reading those words, I gave up the search for a better way to pray than first thing in the morning. There is no better way, no matter how much of a non-morning person you are. I surrendered to what God had been trying to tell me for years and years, and I decided to become one of the others that Gilbert writes about, who get up in the morning, wash their faces, and go to their prayers. Now, I had to rearrange my schedule, and the first thing I had to do was go to bed earlier. You can't get up earlier if you don't go to bed on time. So I actually had to set an alarm on my cell phone to remind me to get ready for bed. Because I'm not a morning person, but I'm not a night person either. I'm not real sure what I am. I guess a midday person. But I would just kind of be plodding around the house, and next thing I'd know, it'd be midnight or something like that. Or I'd be watching TV and get involved in a show. In order to get up, I need 8 hours of sleep a night. In order to get up 8 hours after I go to bed, 8 hours is enough for me. I need to go to bed on time. So if I'm getting up at 6 or 5 a.m. in the summertime, which we do out here in the desert, 7 a.m. now that it's winter, I need to be in bed by a certain time. I wash my face and brush my teeth and let the dog out and give her a lecture about leaving me alone for a half hour, and then I go to my prayers. Now, Sister Pat, this is my thing as a single woman now living by myself. Is it easier in the convent to get up in the morning? Because I know you have to get up early.
I think it's easier because you have no choice.
Oh.
And that always fails. It's
never
like
thought
not
of
an
that.
Option here. You know, it's like it's easier just because you have no choice. It's still hard to do it, but when it's part of the discipline, you know, when everybody, in fact, I have to get up and wake everybody else up, so I have to get up. I can't even lie in bed for 2 minutes, because if I'm 2 minutes late, which could go into 10 minutes, everybody else is going to be late. But so we have a wake-up time. Monasteries do different, but in our house, we wake up at 5 o'clock. I go to every door and knock on every door and say, let us praise the Lord, and they say, thanks be to God, and that's their first words in the morning is thanks be to God.
Oh, isn't that neat?
So they're starting
out.
Well, I
want to write that down.
Yeah. So, and then, you know, it's actually now I love it, but I have to say that in the beginning, prayer was hard because some days you feel like it and some days you don't. And the,
right,
and the
yeah.
trick about praying is that you make it, you don't make give yourself an option. It's not only when I feel like it. And that's one of the main reasons I entered the monastery was because I knew on my own I'd only do it when I felt like it. And
right.
that would be very little after a while. So I would say if you're going to do morning prayer, and you really, really should, is that don't give yourself an option. Don't say, I'm tired, I didn't get enough sleep, whatever. It's not
yeah.
an option.
Yeah, that's true. And I've been kind of cutting corners because I guess this all started just about a month or two ago. And there's been nights when I've had a bad night, you know, and I don't, you know, I changed the alarm to be a little bit later. And oftentimes it doesn't work out that well. Getting up right at dawn is the very, very best time. So whenever that is where you live, you know, or whatever's good. If you have a family that demands, you know, your attentions and you have to do certain things, you have to get up a half hour before them. And also you have to tell them, hey, if you get up and you see mom up or dad, you're not to disturb me until I come out of this room. So that's one of the other things you have to do is you have to have a place where you go to meet God every morning. For me, this has been a wonderful, wonderful practice. It only took a few days to realize I'd been missing out on the best part of the day and the best praying I'd ever done by laying in bed like I had done before and just hopping out of bed when it was time to get up. I found what I really wanted in the spiritual life, a deep and satisfying relationship with God and peace and a sense of God's presence all throughout the day. And I tell you what, when things get really crazy, you know, like Christmas preparations or any other day you're having where you're really having a day, that appointment with God really helps to calm you down. Now, when I say keep your morning appointment with God, I don't mean a quick rosary and off you go. The rosary is wonderful. It's supposed to lead you into prayer. If it does that for you, then you use it. Maybe just one decade if you're pressed for time. A good long, you know, a full rosary can take a little longer. Maybe that's something you should do at another time of day. And I don't mean telling God, here's all the stuff I have to do. Please bless me today and help me get it all done. Now, who prays like that?
Well, you know, I want to say one thing that's the discipline of monastery is like our first prayer starts at 6 o'clock when we have a half hour of just adoration. So we just, it's like you just sit there or kneel there or stand there or just be in God's presence.
Oh,
and,
that's good.
And so it's, you know, it's structured in there. You know, we don't even have the morning prayer, which is an official prayer where we have the psalms and readings and that kind of thing, until we've had a half hour of just being there with God.
Oh, that's really a good idea. Yes. And morning mass is a different thing, too. I think that's a really good thing to remember that don't you're just there to be with God. This is private, one-on-one, daughter-son quality time with your Father in heaven, just like Jesus used to do every morning. That's how Jesus knew where to go each day and what to do, and tonight's the night we're walking on water, and tonight's the night, you know, we're going to heal so-and-so, and that's how he got the strength to do what he was doing. He didn't just have prayer time because he was God. He had prayer time because that's what people do who want to have a close relationship with God. I want to bring something out about this morning appointment with God. A lot of people could say they get nothing out of it, but you really have to look at what not what are you doing, because this isn't a time for doing. You're just there to be with God. Be. Now, wouldn't it be peculiar if someone you hadn't seen for a long time called you and asked you out to lunch, and you're full of anticipation, and the day arrived, and you met the person, and he or she slid into the booth across from you and pulled out a piece of paper and read something, like, really nice about you that someone else had written. And then they slid out of the booth and left. Wouldn't that be odd? That's what we often do to God every morning. We do all the talking. Maybe we read somebody else's prayer, and then we leave. Or maybe we say, I'd like a blessing. God wants to be your friend. God wants to be your Father. Here's the thing about morning prayer. It isn't all that hard. You don't have to do anything, so get out of that cultural thing where you do all the time. God doesn't need to be impressed. He's already impressed by you. He made you. He loves you. He thinks you're wonderful. Just hang out and waste time with God. It's all about relationship, being, not doing certain things for God. Now, how do you build a relationship? Well, you just spend time with the person, don't you? I mean, you have friends. You meet them at restaurants. What do you do? What do you talk about? Nothing. Just everything, whatever. You're just hanging out with the person. You eat with them. You sit across from each other, and you look at each other. And you enjoy one another's company. And that's what it is. That's what that half hour of adoration is. That's a very good way to start prayer. You don't have the Blessed Sacraments in your home like Sister Patricia does. You're very, very lucky there. But we always have God's presence, so we can just sit and adore God, just be with God. And really, actually, if you're not a morning person, this is good, because you can't think too clearly, so you don't have to think, and you don't have to do anything, and you don't have to make any decisions, and it's just a really good time just to be with God. Be careful not to fill your morning prayer with stuff, with clutter, chatter, practices, devotions, even prayers, quote-unquote, just talking. Learn to relax when you are with God. Just be you and let God be God, and then see what happens. It'll be wonderful, I can guarantee. If I had told you at the beginning of this seminar, I have a way for you to get a hold of your crazy Christmas schedule, calm yourself down, and get all the important things done to be centered on the important things in life, would you have guessed the answer is to get up earlier? Not to do more work, more Christmas preparations, but to waste time with God? But that is the answer, isn't it? And you know it. It's the answer to our culture, because our culture says, do, 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 produce, get busy, get going. And God says, be still and know that I am God. He says, be who you are, my child, my beloved, be. Don't do yet. You can do later, not the first half hour of the day. What do you need to do? Here I am saying do. What needs to happen that you can spend the first day of your God with your first part of your day with God, just enjoying one another, sitting together, and drinking in God's love? So here's some things I want you to write down. Any that tweak your you'll just know. Do you need to go to bed earlier so that you can get up earlier? At least a half hour before everybody else does, before you need to get up. Do you need to find or prepare a quiet place to meet God? That's really important. Some place really where you can close the door, especially if you have little kids. Might have to be the bathroom, but hey. Do you have to ask God for a new attitude? I had a real attitude problem, and that's okay. Go to God with it and say, you know, I've got a real attitude problem about this. I need help. That's okay. God loves that. Be honest. Do you need God to give you a mantra to quiet your busy mind? Because the Eastern people talk about the monkey mind that swings around in the bushes, and it just chatters and chatters away, and I've got that problem. And around Christmas time, the little monkey mind will be telling you all the things you need to do. Is that a problem? One of the things, you need to find something, you've already got it inside there. You've got a favorite scripture verse or a favorite prayer that is very simple. I found out that what my mantra is what they call the doxology at the end of the Divine Mercy chaplet. You know the doxology. It's Holy God, Holy Mighty One, Holy Immortal One, have mercy on us and on the whole world. I love it when I'm doing the Divine Mercy Chaplet and I get to that part. I want to say it over and over again. It was like God said, there's your mantra. You like saying that. So just do it. And I breathe and I say that, and it really is a miracle how it calms my mind down. The other thing you may need is to learn how to breathe. Now, I go into this in my book a little bit. There's lots of stuff in my book about things like this. But one of the things, and I've taught groups of people like this because we don't know how to breathe. And I want to give you a little lesson, even though you can't see me, but you can do this on your own. I want you to take your hands and put them on your lower abdomen. And the first thing I want you to do is I want you to blow out very gently through your mouth and make that go flat as possible. You'll feel it going in, and just breathe out until it goes out, you know, your tummy goes in, and then let it drop, and you'll just feel it let go. Then your lungs will fill up with good air. That is how you breathe. You breathe out, and then you let your lungs do the rest. You don't have to suck in air. Your body will do it naturally. So the breathing is kind of the opposite of what you would think it is. Breathing involves consciously breathing out and then letting your body bring in the good oxygen. And this is a good practice because it also distracts the monkey mind from chattering away, because it is something you have to concentrate on. Boy, it took me about a year to learn how to breathe right, and I was a singer. So that is something we do not know how to do. Morning prayer and communication with God means you are giving your first fruits of your day to God. Remember, in the Old Testament, they always talked about the first fruits of the harvest, the first fruits of this. We're giving the first fruits of our time to God. What is the most important thing to you in your life? It's easy to find out. What do you think about first thing in the morning? What do you jump out of bed and rush to do each morning? In every other country, culture, and religion of the world, the day begins with prayer. Go to an Arab country or a Hindu country, and the bells and the loudspeaker with the prayer leader will wake you out of bed or even knock you out of bed before the sun is up. And travelers often grumble about this when they visit Arab countries or India. That Christianity started out that way too. Jesus always got up before the sun to pray, and that wasn't unusual at all. That's a tradition in the Middle East and most everywhere in the world. Only our Western culture says, jump out of bed and start working. Ever think about that? That's not normal, folks. It may seem normal to us, but it's really not normal, and it's not normal in the kingdom of God. If God is the center of your life, then you jump out of bed to be with God, and that's as simple as it is. My life used to be centered on other people, especially the demanding people I used to live with. People have always been important to me, and they still are. But God has to come first, before the coffee is made, before the lunches are made, before I find the favorite jeans. And there's only one way I can love everyone else, by loving God first. Which brings us to, very short, the Sabbath. And we have about 20 minutes left, so I'm not going to go into this in a big way. I wrote extensively about the Sabbath in Make Room for God, chapter 17. Get a drink of water.
And, you know, that chapter, the chapter on the Sabbath, it was just so important for me because in the monastery we keep the Sabbath, obviously, but this just brought it out how much better I could keep it, you know, and how much better,
oh, really?
Bad, or how much I wasn't keeping it, you know. And it's just,
right.
I would say, in your book, I loved a lot of it, but that chapter on the Sabbath was so huge, just really huge for me.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much. And you know what? That was the easiest book for me to write, the easiest chapter for me to write. It was the one I had really been living since I met the rabbi in college who was my professor and who took me home on the Sabbath and taught me how the Jews celebrate Shabbat, they call it. The Sabbath is a whole day not to do, but to be.
Yeah, and even in the monastery, it's hard not to be, to do and be, you know, and that, I loved how it just put it into focus for me.
Yeah, we're used to doing all the time. That's what our culture says to do. But the Sabbath is a gift from God, and it's just perfectly designed for our busy world. And actually, like I said before, it fits with every other culture. I read some historical books, and I read some things by a Roman leader who accused the Jews of being lazy and disloyal because they took one day off a week. Can you imagine? But that was the Roman culture, and we really have picked that up, haven't we, today? The Sabbath is also the only one of the Ten Commandments whose focus is really me. The first few were about God, how we treat God and how we obey God. The last are about how we treat other people. The Sabbath commandment is the one that's for me. It's a gift for me. It's also the only commandment we disobey in this culture without a pang of consciousness. Even Christians and Jews and just disobey this commandment a lot, and it's really a shame that we do. It's a gift God has given us. It's not a big should that is hard to keep. The Sabbath is an enlargement of the morning prayer habit, extended into a whole day, which, of course, includes your Sunday Mass. I would suggest, though, that you get ready for the Sabbath the night before, like the Jews do, because you don't want to just be, by the time you get to Mass with children and that kind of thing, you can be pretty crazy. The object is to intentionally stop doing what we normally do during a normal work week. Work, obviously, has to be stopped. Cooking, cleaning, Christmas preparations. The Sabbath is a whole day just to hang out with God and your loved ones. It's a day you get to choose whatever you want to do, as long as it's not work. Or you can do nothing. Or if you live with other people, ask them how they'd like to spend the day. Children are wonderful at coming up with these things, and you'll find out they have been longing to maybe just go to the park for a picnic or something like that. Of course, at this time of year in the United States, that's not going to be possible. But, you know, you could go somewhere else and have a picnic indoors or that kind of thing. Now, we're running out of time, so I can't go into this in any great detail, but I want to suggest that for Advent, you start with this. Start keeping the Sabbath of some sort. If you want more detail, see chapter 17 of my book. But all you need to know right now is that the Sabbath is a day when you simply stop. You stop all your Christmas preparations. You stop your running around and worrying. You just stop. You need to have this time of month, this month, to just stop and be. Be yourself with God. Stop your Christmas preparations. Stop all of that. That, with 15 minutes or 30 minutes a day and the first thing in the morning, hanging out with God will make all the difference. Christmas is our major Sabbath. I mean, Easter is even bigger, but right now we're looking forward to Christmas. It is Jesus' birthday. I know he wasn't born in December, but this is when we celebrate it. It is meant to be savored and enjoyed. Yes, there are preparations to be made, but the object is not to exhaust yourself before the day gets here and have no energy left to enjoy it. So I hope all of you have a very blessed Christmas. I hope what we've talked about has helped you let go of how the culture says to celebrate. Find your own best way to celebrate. You don't have to conform to what the culture says. What a shock. You don't have to do the things the way you've always done them. You're allowed to change things this year forever. You're allowed to let things go. We talked about all those things we do. If you don't want to send out Christmas cards this year, God bless you. Don't send them out. Ask yourself those questions we asked. We're going to send those out to you, too. But be free to do what you want to do. Consistency does not equal holiness, and getting crazy and broke is really useless when you're talking about celebrating a holy holiday. This season is a gift from God. Enjoy it. If we're not enjoying it, we only have to blame ourselves. And feel free to talk things over with your family and ask them what's important. I think they will give you some great insights. Now, Sister Pat, I'm going to let you take over, and we have, what, 16 minutes left, I have?
Okay. So one of the things that we wanted to do with part of the seminar was to show you how wonderful it is to put God first in your life, to make time for God, and how everything else will fall into place. And part of that is the clutter that's in our mind. You know, there's so much outside clutter that's there that we're always thinking we have to deal with the clutter first before we can have peace within. But it's kind of a halfway thing. We have to do both things. But we really have to start first with that peace in the morning and that Sabbath rest, which I must tell you, since I've read your book, I've kept Sabbath so much better, and I've just been so much more peaceful. And
well,
it's
thank
just
you.
Really, really
wonderful.
Important
yeah.
to do those two things.
Right.
You know, and like I say, for me, in the monastic life, you know, we have the times of prayer, and that is huge, because it's just programmed in, you know. But you need to program it in. You need to take responsibility for your walk with God and say, you know, it doesn't matter how many things to be done. At the end of my life, I'm going to be accountable for how much I love God and how much I let God love me. And that's going to happen only if we give God some time in our life. And mm-hmm. so what I wanted to talk about a little bit is about a seminar that we're going to be doing in January. It's a 3-week seminar, one day a week, to help us get into what God can do in our life and how by letting God into our life, we can get rid of the clutter, both the mental clutter, the spiritual clutter, because there's a lot of spiritual clutter we have as well, and then actual physical clutter. And it's a time that I'm going to let Susan minister to me during those 3 weeks, because I have a lot of physical clutter out here. I'm not going to show you my desk, but if I did, you would see that I was a good candidate for this program. So it's going to be a 3-week seminar, and it's going to cost a little bit. So we're charging $50 for the seminar, which will be three three sessions, 1 hour session once a week. But what we're going to do as a special for those of you who are brave enough to come and share with us on this free gift, we're going to offer it to you until this Friday, December 7th, for only $25. So that would be three one-hour seminars for just $25. And I really believe that, you know, we have to charge a little bit just because we got to put some food on the table and take account of our time and that kind of thing. You know, it's sad to say, but some expense has to happen, and so we need to help take care of that. So we are charging, you know, $50 for the program, but we're giving a special $25 session until Friday. And so we encourage you to you know, give yourself that Christmas gift of getting rid of the clutter. It might be the best Christmas gift you give yourself. And sometimes in the monastery, one of the things we've done is we ask, what do you want for Christmas? You know, because sometimes it's hard to figure it out. And we give ourselves, you know, the sisters will get it for us, but we tell them exactly what we want, what would help me the most, what would make me the happiest. And, you know, sometimes getting rid of the clutter, mental, physical, spiritual, is a gift that you might give yourself, or you might give to somebody else that you really feel is tense, and they could just find some time, because this is a different seminar about clutter than your usual clutter. This is a God-centered, a peace-filled time to let the time, to let clutter go so you can have time with God. And so I'm just hoping that some of you will join with us, and it'll be the same format as this. You will get the recordings. There will be a workbook. There will be practices to do each week so you can measure your progress. And there will also be the group support of you're doing it with a group. And that kind of sometimes helps. You don't have to, you might just pick one project that you want to work on during those 3 weeks. You know, it might be your desk, or it might be your office, or it might be your whole house. But you want to just give yourself the gift of getting rid of clutter. And so if you've liked this seminar, I really think you'll love the 3 days with Susan and myself, and we just kind of share how we're working through the problems. And for me, it's going to be a time to work through those problems as well, because, you know, I have my moments of peace. I have my moments of getting everything ready, clean and wonderful, but they don't last so long. So I'm looking for this time to just to make it, you know, something that I can stay with and go more forward. But so that's what I'm going to say, and we're going to send you out an email with the details about the seminar, and so you can sign up when you click on it, and you can sign up if you like to.
Okay.
And then, you know, don't feel obligated.
You know what,
anyway.
Sister Pat, a lot of people are joining us not from your email list, so we don't have their email address. So, what's the site that they need to go to?
Okay. Well, you need to go to 101prayer.com. 101prayer.com.
Okay.
Okay.
And then
you want to put /clean, CLEAN. So that's 101prayer.com/clean.
Okay.
101prayer.com/clean.
Okay.
And
all
give
right.
us your email. And that's just it. What there is there's a form there for signing up for this program. So you won't be signing up for the program. You're just signing up to get the emails, not signing up for the program, because the program itself is going to come later. We're going to send you details about the program later.
Okay, yes.
We're still working out all the
I know that
details.
There's about 500 people joined us from your email presence, but I also know I spoke to about 370 people in Miami and gave a lot of people. You are joining us from Florida, and then there's a lot of people from the Phoenix area, and who knows, St. Anthony Messenger has sent the word out to a lot of people too, so we don't want to miss anybody. So if you do want to sign up for it, it's 101prayer.com/clean, and you'll come to a nice page that Sister has designed, and it'll tell you how to sign up for it. More details, these are Tuesday nights in January. I believe we've set on Sister Pat, it's January 8th, 15th, and 22nd. Is that still good for you? So this is a week
That's
after New Year's Day.
Mm-hmm.
It'll give you a chance to recover from the holidays.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to be the same time as this one.
Same time.
So wherever you are right now, it'll be the same time of night. If you're Pacific time, it's 6 p.m. If you're Arizona time, it's 7. And if you're on the East Coast, it's 8 p.m. or 9 p.m. And then some of you are joining us from Singapore, and it's morning the next day, and how wonderful so many of you joined us. So
yes,
I want to talk
who are listening, it's going to be recorded. So if you're listening to this later and you're not here on the live call, you know, you have until the 7th to sign up for, I have until the 7th to sign up for a special, another offer that I forgot to mention, and that is if you want to get Susan's book. This morning we weren't going to offer the book, and then I thought this morning, I said, we got to offer the book because this book is so good. And so I called up St. Anthony Messenger, who handles the book, and asked them if they could give us a special rate. And it's like last minute, you know, like this 6 hours before the seminar, can you help us out? And it's like, oh, my gosh, you know, they're getting to know how crazy I am. But anyway, so they came through, and so they've offered us a special discount for the book, and it's so the whole book, which with shipping and everything, will only be for $11.31, and
yeah.
You can get the book. It'll be shipped to you before Christmas. You might want to get it for a gift for somebody, or you might want to get it for yourself if you're going to take the class. You might want to do a little pre-studying,
yeah.
Pre-meditating yourself.
Well, that'll really help you to get started. And it's the chapters are real short. You know, they take a lot of thought, but there's nothing really heavy in there. And there are questions to answer. But I have to tell you that some of the material in this teleseminar is not going to be in the book, because as I go around speaking, it just the message evolves and God gives me things to do. So there's one particular exercise that is not in the book, and I don't know when I'm going to get it into a book, but right now it's a very popular exercise to diagnose what we're doing with our lives. It has to do with our work habits and that kind of thing, and which I think is so important in this country especially, that we work so hard and we don't know why we're working. So that's one of the things. We are going to send out, for the people who sign up, I don't have my workbook done, and I probably can't get it done by January. I'm not going to try. But we're going to have worksheets that go with this seminar, and we will be sending them out to the people who sign up. So you're going to get a 3-week seminar, an hour apiece, plus then we'll open up the phone lines at the end of each seminar and I'll stay with you as long as you want to stay. You know, people want to talk for some personal help and input and that kind of thing. The worksheets and then the book would be a separate thing. But do they go to the same place to get the book, sister?
Yeah, when you go to that 101prayer.com/clean, you're going to see a link to get the Christmas book at a discount, and you can click on that to get the book.
Okay.
That's not signing
great.
Up for the TEL seminar. That's just the book.
Yeah. And then but especially those of you in Florida and Phoenix who know me personally, some of you I have your email address, but I don't want to bother everybody. I don't know who wants to come or not. So you have to go to this 101prayer.com/clean to sign up for the seminar. And then we will know, you'll pay for it through PayPal with your Visa card, and then we'll know that you're part of that, and we'll start sending your worksheets to do ahead of time as soon as like Christmas, well, maybe before Christmas, but you can just do them anytime so that you'll feel more prepared. But don't worry if you don't get to them, because if you lose them in your clutter or you just can't get to them, that's why you're doing the seminar, isn't it? So don't feel, oh, I am not prepared, I can't come. But if you like doing that kind of thing, then you will do it. Now, I want to put, Sister's been plugging my book, and I want to plug her book. Sister Patricia has these wonderful books called 101 Inspiring Stories of, and then what are the titles? In Stories
There's
of the Rosary,
Rosary
the Priesthood.
Priesthood and Reconciliation. And we're working on prayer. But you know what? If you want to buy the books, that's wonderful. But if you also have special stories about prayer, how you had you prayed and something happened in your life that, you know, I'd love to hear your story and possibly include it in our next book. And
oh,
so if you just
amazing.
Go to 101prayer.com, you can find out how to send in your story and be part of our next book, which will be coming
and
out in May.
And they can order your books through there too, can't they?
I'll put a link there. It's not there yet.
Okay. If you don't see the link, folks, just wait a day. She'll put it in. So, yes.
Okay. Well, I guess we really did really good. We're going to, you know, end the official part of the seminar right now, and then we're going to just open it up to questions. So for those of you who need to get going, we really thank you for coming and sharing with us. I know it was meaningful for me. I hope it was meaningful for you, and I hope that, you know, even if you got just one little glimmer of what you need to do in your life to just let God have a little more room there, I think it will be this time with you was worth it. And we really, really appreciate your coming and being part of it.
Thank you, everybody,
it's such
for coming.
A show of support.
Yes. So let's open up the phone lines, and what kind of questions do we have or comments do we have?